All right, gang, welcome once again. We're here live from New Jersey. We're looking at the Dale Carnegie Golden Book, and we'll take a little time to review our assignment. So usually try to use this one. You know, in any 10-week program, we'll use different homework assignments / assignments. But you can always go to this one. This is one of my favorites because you can go to it many times and still pick out a different one, as many of you have. But if you look right at the first five, don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Give honest, sincere appreciation. Arouse the other person an eager want. Become genuinely interested in other people. Smile. Those are the top five. Remember, these are the principles of Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends, Influence People. And I would say the lion's share of the group just stayed right in that wheelhouse. Several had picked number 24, and that would be own your mistakes before criticizing somebody else's. Own your mistakes. Now, I'm just going to comment on this because my wife, who's pretty cool and makes me a better person, we tag-team putting a five-year-old to bed. And as we were tag-teaming last night, in fact, my young five-year-old is talking about a mistake she made. And that was because my wife was telling her about the mistake she made. And she was actually using a Dale Carnegie principle she had no idea about, but that's just how smart she is. Like, hey, listen, you know, we all make mistakes. This is the mistake I made. And she actually made a pretty bad mistake, and she was explaining it to the youngster. And so now I had to do mine. And so that was our evening. But one really stuck out. And that would be, we're going to go to number three, arouse in the other person an eager want. And so here's a few words from one of our very excellent people on our staff here. The winner for me, arouse the other person an eager want. Try not to start with your wants and needs when teaching, but find out theirs. Once you know what the other person needs and wants are, you can establish a plan that they will, in effect, respond to. If you can get people to buy in, get them excited, get them eager to want for the team, then and only then can you coach them up. Okay? Set expectations higher than what they can achieve. Give them responsibility more than they used to. Get solid goals and achieve, make them measurable, and always deliver feedback and praise. Those are pretty good words for one of our leaders here. So we'll remain anonymous because I don't have any more $25 gift certificates to give out. I gave all those out now, but we will save one for the final call. So I kind of like that. But you know, anytime all these challenges are supposed to do is to get us thinking, get us a little more involved in problem solving, which is a great leadership trait, which we just don't normally do unless it's presented in front of us. So. At any rate, we're going to move on, and we'll look at today's lesson. It's actually entitled 10 Tactics for Lifetime Genius. 10 Tactics for Lifetime Genius. Now, sometimes I'll make it 8 or 10 or 12, whatever. Just sometimes you got to mix it up, but just happened to come up with 10 this time. And so right off the bat, here's your quote. Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. That was from Thomas Edison, who was mentioned in the last book I just read on the plane, coming back from Detroit. And it was actually a pretty nice little book, fit in your pocket. It was convenient. I was very excited to find this little book. And it was just called Brain Exercises. And so it was really a really cool little book to teach us, and I'm going to use some of that here throughout this talk. But so genius is 1% inspiration, 90%. Here we go. 1% inspiration, 99%. I'm getting very perspirited right now. So I use this word genius because it's one of my nightly habits to use this little service I get called Word Genius. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it's a little game, and it's growing your mind, learning new things. All this, remember, stimulates neurogenesis. But this word genius I just brought into play here only because We're going to talk about how words really affect our intellect and our IQ. So are you ready for the top 10 tactics? Here's the first tactic. If you're taking notes, you can take the notes, or when this will go onto the website. You don't have to call in and dial in. So this will be on the website, as with all the talks. So, number one, continue learning. A little cliche there, but I'm pretty much of a believer that the ability to learn is the most important quality a leader can have. We can't stop learning. And, you know, Einstein was apparently a pretty good role model for this, and he was a good model for what we call independent study. And if you read anything about this guy, he was, he had a pretty good IQ, but a lot of his intellect was self-taught, so to speak. And so he really liked listening to the piano. He liked listening to Mozart. And so at a very young age, I believe it was about age 12, he taught himself the piano. You just don't see that happen every day. But, you know, I mean, maybe a little obsessive, but that was really what we call independent study. He did, a little bit after that, teach himself algebra. He loved math. So even though he had teachers along the way, he kept teaching himself. And he said in this little article, in graduate school, he taught himself electricity and magnetism. And I just got to thinking, you know, I don't know if I want to self-teach myself electricity. That one might be a little rough, but it just goes to tell you, you know, continue learning. If Einstein can do it, anybody can do it. And that's it. So that's your first tactic. The second tactic. Train the brain through memorization. I know that's not the first time you've heard this one. But in this little Brain Builders book, it really had a whole chapter on this neurogenesis, which we're talking about, and how we really, really develop through the memorization. And by the way, at this point in time, I am going to come out, tell everybody, I am a bibliophile. Yes, that's right. A bibliophile. And you see, that's a new word I've learned. I didn't know what that was until reading this book, and it is a lover of books. So what do you know? You can still learn even at this age. Can you believe it? But it is pretty funny because our little brilliant Miles, we say, our minds learn from all the senses. But apparently vision is the big one. And we say kids learn about 10% from reading, about 20% from actually hearing, but 50% of what we see. And so visualization seems to be a key to memorizing. We've mentioned this a time or two in our leadership camp. Ancient practices show this. But I'm looking here at my first article of Success Magazine, Exhibit A. We're going to look right here. And just bought this one at the airport. Not a bad, I think, $8.95, Success Magazine. And here is a chapter on visualization. I'm going to just read real quickly from it. New research coming out of Oxford and Cambridge suggests that your ability to vividly imagine details about a bright future dramatically increases your energy and momentum, which leads in turn to constructive action. When your mind's eye can picture exactly what that bright future looks like, it will orientate itself into the direction of that vision. Okay. All right, I'll take that. Usually anything that comes out of Oxford and Cambridge, I'm thinking, might be okay. But I have another one I recently found on visualization. And, of course, as you look back in your course history, you know that the habit of visualization would be habit number 2, Stephen Covey, begin with the end in mind. But here's an article, visualize, visualize, visualize. Now, convinced that you're not convinced visualization helps your memory, a Harvard study found that people who visualize playing the piano turned on the same part of the brain as those who actually practice the piano. That's fairly significant. This finding suggests that mentally practicing, say, a golf swing could lead to mastery with less physical practice, more profoundly, that mental training changes the physical structure of the brain. So we're really starting to see, again, more and more research on this brain and how we can really use this power of visualization. And really what we say is that helps us memorize stuff. And we've talked about memorizing words, memorizing names, and this book that I just really discovered really lists all kinds of very difficult words, easy words, but just as I've been in my evening habit, word genius, you're learning a word a day. And then a couple times a week, it'll throw you into a trivia contest to see if you remember those words, what they mean, and how they fit in. And it's pretty cool. Once you really start breaking down the words, and you might remember that little phrase, etymology, breaking down those words, they become more meaningful. We can almost break down and understand any word. Once we understand the prefixes, and there's hundreds of prefixes, but we know that, you know, they are going to help us out. The suffixes help us out, the root word. So once we start eyeballing these and we get better at it, you can almost guess at almost any word. And there's some difficult ones where you might have four choices. You really don't know, but you can break the word down and take a pretty good educated guess. And it really works. But that is helping stimulate that neurogenesis, the brain's ability to grow. So enough on that one. How about number three? How about developing an art of asking questions? Developing the art of asking questions. Somewhere along the line they said, well, you have the gift of gab. Mm-hmm. Might be a Jersey thing. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you just recently, talking with Jake Klein, he referred to one of our favorite books by Michael Stanier, The Coaching Habit. And Stanier's one of these guys. He's kind of a lover of books himself, but he understands coaching and pretty much how we have to keep avoiding the advice monster, and we learn through observation, through asking the right questions. And you think back about any of your great teachers that you had throughout your education, the ones that pretty much motivated you, inspired you, were asking questions all the time and getting you to ask questions. And so even us in our environment, whether it's in the sub shop itself, recruiting, marketing, keep asking questions. And I can tell you, I learned a heck of a lot just sitting next to a guy on a plane just today, just asking questions. So, remember, that's what Coach Hughes likes to always ask too. Teach, don't tell. Coach, don't yell. All right, enough about that. Let's go to number four. Understand the power of words. Might be on this one for a bit. Might remember quoting the monks a time or two, if your heart's not right, your words won't be right. Words really mean everything. And when you start thinking about how the brain works, we think in words. We communicate in words. They're tools of thought, so to speak. As a man thinketh, so he is. Memory is largely stored in words. Your IQ is mainly tested on the words you know. The words can be learned, and therefore your memory and your brain power can be increased. Here we go again. And so here's just a little blurb out of a book. We are in a book club with several of our franchisees across the country. This was from the book just recently, The Four Agreements. And one of our goals, we're in our book club, a book a month. All you have to do is write a one-pager at the end. And this is part of the one-pager from this book, The Four Agreements. Be impeccable with your word. That was the fourth agreement. The most powerful and yet most difficult agreement to always keep yourself is being impeccable with your word. Through words, we create our world, manifest everything. Your word is pure magic, but the misuse of it is defined as black magic. Examples of black magic are gossiping, negative self-talk, using your word to inject fear in others. That was, in parentheses, Hitler. Impeccability means without sin. Using your words impeccably leads to personal freedom. It takes away all fear, allows you to live in joy and love. And so we talk about really what words mean. It's yes, it's the words. And we're saying understand the power of words and really how it can affect the people you're talking to. And are you using uplifting words? Are you using constant negative words? It really is a lesson in self-evaluation, and you have to sometimes slow down, let the brain catch up, and let the mouth shut up before the words come out. And so that is a habit that sometimes you have to work on. And sometimes we just want to blurt out certain emotions that come out. We've got to have more self-control. And so we know that words can really cut somebody down, or they can build people up. So I think that is one of our tactics for a lifetime of genius, and we need to all get better at that one. How about number 5? Carve out time for creativity. If somebody asks you, are you a creative person, what do you say? Is it a yes or a no? Is it a maybe? And, you know, we use that word transcendence. What lets our brain start to go to that creative side? We hear about the left brain and the right brain. And looking at art, for instance, can cause one to transcend somewhat and switch your brain's hemispheres. Writing a poem, listening to music, writing a story. Little things that help us become more creative. I think of my 5-year-old and dancing. If you want to see something funny, you just let her go and put the music on and start dancing. And it's just mm-hmm. hilarious. You could sell those videos. Mm-hmm. Because it's just really, at that age, the creativity, there's no inhibition. You know, it's really kind of cool to see. And we'll do this every few days. But another one of the fun things to do to see the creativity is coloring books. And that's actually a therapy used in adults, coloring books, if you can believe that. And more than that, we actually do things like we'll draw aliens. It's fun to draw a 3-headed alien. Drawing exercises. And the other day, we were designing our own leaf. So endless things you can do sometimes just to inspire some creativity. Try to find yourself a 5-year-old and hang out for a bit, mm-hmm. and you'll see. All right, number 6, 10 tactics, lifetime genius. Practice kindness. If you didn't know, kindness is actually an action word. I was just recently met a gal who started up a business, and it was called Mankind. Be Kind, Mankind. It was, she's an entrepreneur trying to really not make a whole lot of money, but just really she's trying to spread kindness. I mean, that's her mission. And it's an action word. We say, you've heard of, well, she has a kind face. Okay. Well, that's nice to know, but how do I know she's kind unless I see that kindness, unless I see her trying to help somebody, unless I see. So that's what we say, action word. You got to put kindness into action. Just can't talk about it. Can't say, oh, yeah, I'm a kind person. Well, what have you done recently? But you always have to look for these things, too. Yesterday, I'm in the airport, and I'm waiting for my good friend, Josh. Hi, Josh here. And out of the women's bathroom comes a gal who is Down syndrome, wearing her Special Olympic shirt. But she was very panicked, and she was asking for her mom. And her mom was nowhere in sight. And there I happened to be placed, just happened to see that she was in distress. And so you just kind of look around and say, okay, we're going to find your mom. Tell me your name. And so, you know, just kind of help try to calm her down a little bit. Just a simple act of kindness. I just felt great all day. I mean, it's not so much what you're doing for them as much as sometimes how you feel yourself. And even the scientists will tell us that the brain changes when we're kind. So look for it, practice it, but it is something you do. So we all know that. Number 7. Surround yourself with great books and great people. So, in addition to being a bibliophile, as previously stated, my new word of the week, I'm also into hagiology. So, hagiology, anybody know what hagiology is? Well, that really is nothing more than the study of saints. And so I don't know why, but probably the last 5 years of my career just happened to saint books just keep coming into my lap, and they're all really just kind of intriguing to me, because not only do we are we not born saints, but, you know, you become a saint. And so they are kind of intriguing stories, but, I mean, why not learn about actual people throughout the course of history who actually were born not saints, but they were just acting virtuously. So they had virtuous behavior, which led them to become a saint. And generally, it was just from serving others. And most often, it had a consequence of death. So, especially the early saints and the first century saints, a lot of them were martyred because of their beliefs, and mainly because they were risking their lives and a lot of them died for a higher cause. But those, any biography, to me, is a great book, great read, but it's also historical event. And I think that, you know, when we think about history, it serves us very well, not just to know what our history is, but then to be able to talk about it and keep it fresh. And in a really strange way, I'm surrounding myself not just with their true, but very real stories, the biographies, the saints. Cicero once said, the Italian philosopher, a room without books is like a body without a soul. And I, for one, am a sucker for any of those classics like Moby Dick, Man in the Sea, Casablanca, and some of the authors like Alfred Hitchcock, you might have heard of, C.S. Lewis, Ernest Hemingway, Mark Twain. There's a million of them. So it is, who's in your circle of friends is next part of that question. Now, how many times growing up did your parents say, did one of your mentors say, your teachers, who are you hanging out with? Mm-hmm. Why are you hanging out with that guy? And there might be reasons why, but we know how most important those choices we make are that our friends. They're our influencers. I know I'm a much better person because I'm influenced by my wife. There's no question about it. I look back on my own, I see my former teammates, teachers, like the monks, all making me better people. But we're always looking to find out who is not making us better people. And that's when you have to ask yourself, maybe I need new friends. And who you're surrounding yourself with is your choice. And it's no accident that I also surround myself with this old coach named Rod Smith, which you may have heard now. Anybody on this call, the Rod Smith Scholarship Now. Peter has used Rod's name to help get anybody in this industry, a new store. Kind of like the STAY program. And of course, I do hang out with a guy named Peter Cancro. Not bad company. So look at your current situation. See if you need to make any changes. I have one thought back in high school. There was a group of us, and Peter was one of them. And it was probably three or four of us, and we got called into the office. And we were pretty much the school leaders. We went to Boys State. We were the captains of this and that. You know, I was the captain of the chess club. But we had our principal sit down and say, listen, we're going to give you guys a project. You're going to take this younger boy under your wing. And we just looked at him and said, what? We're going to what? No, we're not going to do that. And he said, yeah, we're not asking. We're telling you, this boy's in distress, and he needs good influencers. This was our very first time we ever sat around, looked at each other, and said, we're good influencers? And so that's how they saw us. And so they took this troubled kid and weaved him into our group, and still today he's become a lifelong friend, and not only that, a Hall of Fame coach, and has made quite a successful career in life out of for himself. But that was a very interesting marker in his life and ours. So number 8. You might have heard of this one before. Understand the principle of want. Pretty simple. It's better to want what you have than have what you want. It's an old cliche that kind of leads us into you first have to believe it and then actually apply it to your life every day. It's a daily mantra. I like to say tattoo it to your brain. Something easy to memorize. Because our brains are under attack every day, especially if you have a TV or a phone. I think most of us have that. I've heard the term digital dementia, which I think is actually pretty accurate. And I was in line to get in on the plane a couple days ago, and I sent a video to my buddies because I just took a video of the 25 people around me that you could see all had their heads down and they were just on their phones. No one but no one was talking to anybody. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're at. And I love these little projections of 50 years and now how our necks and heads are going to look and how our posture's messed up and how our eyeballs are not working. Just something to think about. But I'm not going to get too far off of that on that one. But we are getting deluged by thousands of messages a day telling you that we need more. Turn on TV, every other commercial. You should have what you want. I remember the slogan of California years ago was, if it feels good, do it. Now they just changed it to the land of fruits and nuts, which is probably more accurate. But when I think about the things in my life, you know, I want my wife. I want my kids. I want these boots that I'm wearing. I want my motorcycle. I don't need new boots, even though every time I go into the store, hey, you need new boots. No, I don't. I don't need a new motorcycle. I don't need a new wife. I'm grateful for what I have. I have what I want, the principle of want. And you hear even more than that in coaching. You know, you got to have the want. You got to have want to. Nobody's going to change unless they want to. But this concept of want does go deep into our DNA, I think. And it leads right into the next tactic, number 9, gratitude as an attitude. Really just a continuation, and the simple definition is the quality of the heart that brings us happiness. We've talked more and more about this Heart Math Institute. We're learning about the science of the heart. A grateful heart sends out electromagnetic waves. It's a magnet for good things. Less is more. That's part of being grateful. Less is more. And I've shared many times my mission statement, wake up and choose an attitude of gratitude. When we learn, there's the key word, when we learn to appreciate things and the people around us more, our brain chemical activity actually starts to act up. More oxytocin, more dopamine. We start feeling better. We feel happier. And we can get into that forever. We talk more about appreciation. We've got to go right to number 10, and just going to start off by saying plant seeds. Plant seeds. Oh, and specifically, you might want to take notes and say good seeds. Mm-hmm. Plant good seeds. It's an old Kansas thing. Quote, unquote, have faith like a farmer. I remember hearing that for the first time, and it's like, have faith like a farmer. How come they have such great faith? Well, you think about it. Farmer plants the crop in the spring and pretty much has the faith that he's going to get crops after. There's a process. He's got to take care of these crops. I know a little bit about that. I had a roommate who was on a farm, and you can imagine a Jersey man on the farm for the first time. Never saw a farm, never saw a cow. You have to water it. You have to water the seeds properly, and that is properly. Farmers are always saying, well, we need the moisture. Always love that. Got to be patient. Got to stay committed. All virtuous things, because you have faith that at some point results are going to appear. At some point, everything changes. The flower comes up. The wheat comes up. The corn comes up. But overnight, no. Not overnight. It takes a while. But overnight, everything can change. You can have flooding. You can have a drought. You can have anything that can change. So you always have to be ready, as we say. Growth is taking place even though you can't see it. That's the faith. You're trusting in the process. And usually, always has a good payoff when we trust in it. So we have to keep developing better habits and routines. And if we have to get rid of some of those bad